You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox from Pro Football Focus. And all month long on the podcast, we've been getting you ready for the 2018 NFL Draft. And so today, we will be joined by the great Matt Waldman. He is known for his rookie scouting portfolio that he puts together every year. It's like a draft guide on steroids. And we're going to dive in on some wide receivers and then a few late round running backs as well, because we know the Bears like to grab one of those every year. We'll touch on a few prospects he's higher on than most people and a couple guys he isn't as keen on. And we'll find some names that you need to keep an eye on for the Bears, particularly when we get to the day three of the draft, if they don't find a wide receiver that they like in the first two rounds. Matt's going to go into some pretty great detail on some of his favorite prospects in this draft. So enough introduction. Let's bring on our guest. As promised, we are joined now by Matt Waldman. He is a writer over at Football Guys, but his big project every year, of course, is the rookie scouting portfolio. He breaks down film on different NFL draft prospects on his Twitter account, at Matt Waldman, and also in his film room videos on YouTube and the Matt Waldman YouTube channel. Matt, welcome back to Locked On Bears, and really, congratulations on another RSP production. I think this one, again, up over 1,700 pages in total.
I appreciate it, Lauren. It's nice to be back. I've always enjoyed talking with you on your show. You're very knowledgeable, and it's, you know, this is going to be a good time again.
I know you slaved over the RSP for months. So what was it like in the first few days after it was done and edited and completely ready to go out to the public? You know, do you have more free time, or do you just kind of end up gearing up to, you know, distribute it and promo it and make appearances on a podcast like this one?
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, you spend about a month. I spend about a month writing a 434-page draft guide. So I basically take an easy chair in my office and park it in front of my desk and put my feet up and just write for about 17 hours a day and do a lot of editing and working with a team of people. So by the time I get to the point where it's almost finished, you know, this year has been better because I'm not juggling so many jobs. This is essentially my full-time job now. You know, after about, you know, the first 11 years of doing it, and I'm not in my 13th year, this is my second year where it's been, been my full-time job and I haven't had to juggle it. But it's like, still, you know, I'm getting more sleep, but I end up, by the time you get really close, you're like, let me just get this thing done. And you're pulling an all-nighter or an all-nighter and a half type of thing. And so then the next day, everything gets put out and put up online. And you just kind of want, I kind of hang around my computer because I just want to make sure that I don't have anybody who's like, I don't know how to download it. I'm having trouble, you know, have any type of technical difficulties, which I rarely have. Usually, to be honest with you, it's user error, and we just I walk people through it, and then it's cool. So I just want to make sure everything's working technically. Usually go out to eat and then just like go to sleep and sleep a good bit and just kind of hang around the house. And really what it's about is kind of get reacclimated to life outside of my office, which often turns to, you know, opening up the doors, looking at my wife and going, hi, it's nice to meet you. I'm your husband, you know? And it's kind of that, it's kind of almost like, I mean, I'm being totally metaphor, but like, it's like those astronauts who have been up out in space for a while and they have to get reacclimated to Earth again. That's kind of how I feel for this, like this entire month. And then, you know, then there's tax season and all that other stuff. So it's kind of a weird bumpy ride right now as like my most relaxed time.
Well, I'm glad you're able to relax a little more and take some time out of your newly found free time to spend it with us and talk a little bit of NFL draft. Because, you know, I've been digging into the RSP here the last couple weeks, and I think we should start with the wide receiver position. Of course, it's a big need for the Bears, even after their free agent signings. But when I look at the way you've got these receivers lined up in your RSP, and maybe I should preface this by saying that I really enjoy the section that you put in there before each of the positions about how why rankings suck, but we need them anyway. And so, of course, you do rank them. And your number one wide receiver this year, I think, has caught a lot of eyeballs. It's Dante Pettis from Washington. You have him just above Calvin Ridley and DJ Moore, all kind of in that tier one at the top of the class, but he gets the slight edge above the rest. And so I guess for the casual draft fan who might be listening in that hasn't watched any tape of Dante Pettis, what makes him so good? And I guess what is it that separates him from the likes of Ridley and Moore in your eyes?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, for me, it's funny, my ranking suck kind of was inspired by Tyreek Cohen because I liked him so much. But it's one of those situations where you look at the wide receiver class and there's very little separating, you know, maybe even the first 20 prospects. There's just certain skills where I think there's a lot of guys here who can contribute this year if they get the right fit with the scheme that they're going to go to. And depending on what their draft, their depth chart's going to look like. But when you look at Dante Pettis, I think he's a very strong route runner. He's someone that understands how to tell an efficient story to be able to get open against off-man or man coverage. He's good at being able to use his footwork as well as his hands in conjunction to create separation against press. And he's a very flexible athlete. And some of my favorite wide receivers, regardless of how good they actually were in terms of the length of their career, some of my favorite receivers who have had, you know, high-end production, at least for a season or two, are guys who are very flexible around the ball and be able to go up and win it. Guys like Marvin Jones, Brandon Lloyd was very good at that. And Donald Driver are good examples of players who are very athletic and quick and also can win the ball in the air. And that's something that Dante Pettis does extremely well, and he's strong after the catch in terms of his ability to get yardage after the catch. He broke DeSean Jackson's Pac-10 turn touchdown record, career punt return touchdown record in the Pac-10, you know, while he was at Washington. So this is a guy that, you know, one of my buddies is Matt Harmon over perception. That's one of his, you know, over at the Fantasy Footballers and NFL.com. And he does that really nice study, reception perception. And he and I disagree a little bit about Pettis, but I think that's part of our methodologies where, you know, he looks at separation as kind of having one arm or greater in length on a defender. And mine's a little bit more, look, the guy can be glued to you like a glove, but if you get leverage, you're getting separation. Mine's a little more stringent on the end. You know, mine's a little more stringent in terms of, like, I guess, the NFL lens. It's like when I look at it from that standpoint, you know, there's a little less separation that qualifies for a player to be open. And so when I look at it from that perspective, I have a higher ideal of Pettis's ability to separate than, say, where a guy like Matt, who does incredible work, but maybe, you know, is looking for a little bit more separation from a player.
Yeah, I have a ton of respect for Matt's work. We had him on the podcast a few weeks ago as well when we broke down some of the NFL wide receivers that the Bears brought in free agency. But I do think that you guys both bring a lot to the conversation in terms of evaluating the position of wide receiver, even if you have slightly different criteria. But I want to move to another guy here that I think you are a little bit higher on than maybe the quote-unquote big draft media and sort of the groupthink consensus here, and that's Deion Kane from Clemson. You have him right at the top of your second tier of wide receivers, your fourth-ranked player at the position, right behind Pettis, Calvin Ridley, and DJ Moore. And, you know, this is a guy that I know he has some off-the-field concerns. I think there might have been a drug test and some maturity things that went on at Clemson. But in terms of his tape, what puts him above the rest of sort of this next group of wide receivers behind the top tier?
Well, you have the fact that he's a playmaker after the catch and is someone who can get separation in the vertical game. And it's very easy for him to be able to do so. He gets on top of people pretty quickly. And he has more room for growth in terms of his ability to separate because he can develop a little bit more with his footwork and handwork to get that separation. So he's not a finished product in that area, but he still routinely gets separation, and he's very good at the catch point on fade routes He just has that. He has those late hands, the ability to track the ball, but not really give away his position or his intention as the ball's arriving to the trailing defender. And he can just go up and snatch it, and he does it easily. He has excellent sideline or boundary awareness to keep his feet inside the boundary on deep routes, either near the end line or at the on the perimeter. And after the catch, he's a smooth runner with excellent peripheral vision to be able to avoid pursuing defenders and make them miss. And I like what he does in the middle of the field, even though it's not the part of his game where you'd say it has the highest volume of targets. But when he has been targeted in the middle of the field, he comes up, productively. He plays productively in the middle of the field. He can take a hit. He can go and dig out the ball. He can find the open area. So I think there's a combination of good baseline skills that remind me a lot of what Davante Adams was as a prospect, and upside for him to develop into what Davante Adams actually is at this point, depending on the team that he lands with and, you know, how they want to use him. And if he can develop and he stays out of trouble, that's always the big part, is, you know, that part of the equation that we can't really measure just based on field film, you know, that kind of tape, which is, you know, work ethic and, you know, maturity and ability to deal with adversity. But from what I've seen, he makes it look easy. And based on what he does on the field, he's a really smooth, talented player who didn't play with a top quarterback last year. And the quarterback, you know, that he played with 2 years ago, well, he was suspended two years ago. And he was also stuck behind some, you know, better known players when Deshaun Watson was actually on the field. So, you know, he's kind of one of those guys that kind of fell in between the gaps with Clemson in terms of matchup with opportunity and talent.
So now we've got a couple of great names to keep an eye on here in the draft. But coming up next on the podcast, find out which top wide receiver prospect Matt Waldman's not particularly high on and has him a lot farther down in his rankings than you'll see in most draft scouting reports. And then we'll also touch on some day three wide receivers, particularly the late round guys that have that high ceiling and some of that upside to fly under the radar and end up contributing big roles in NFL offenses. That's coming up next on Locked On Bears. We're here with Matt Waldman, author of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, breaking down some of the top wide receivers in the NFL draft. And Matt, a lot of people have fallen in love with the upside and the big plays we've seen from Courtland Sutton from SMU. But I can tell in your rankings that you're not particularly high on him. I think he is technically your 22nd ranked wide receiver in this draft, down in your tier 4 at the position. And I particularly liked one of your lines about him in the RSP. You said, when he's on, he looks like an aspiring Brandon Marshall with more quickness. When he's off, he's really disappointing. When you got a player like this with the big ups and the big downs, how do you evaluate the baseline of where exactly Courtland Sutton stands as he translates to the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just more about, again, you know, the way that I study players is I watch their tape. I have, you know, over 50 points in my check for wide receivers alone that I'm looking for, not points as in value points, but 50 points of criteria that I study that are defined based on what I'm looking for. And either they're graded, they do it, or they don't do it. And I grade by game. And then I usually, you know, through the number of checklists that I've done on that player, and I look for, you know, consistency there. And then I grade for depth of talent, and I stack rank these guys. And this is all included in the RSP for people to see, which is why it's, you know, it's a 400-page draft guide plus, you know, all the raw notes that I take that make it even bigger. But when you look at someone like this, you know, if you've got defined criteria, it helps you understand, you know, really how well this player's, you know, how consistent this player is or not based on a game per game, catch by catch type of basis. And then on top of that, what you're looking for is, you know, how you project performance, because it's not just about who they are right now, but who you think they can become. And I kind of equate projecting performance to kind of like someone applying for a loan, because you're basically loaning them value that they haven't shown yet. They've shown maybe some collateral for where you can give them a little bit extra value or bonus value. And for me, that, you know, if they were able to be given projection bonuses in my ranking system, or in my evaluation system, you know, on several areas, they may gain 10 to 15 points, which would put them up a tier, you know, or a tier and a half in their value, maybe from being a reserve to a high-end contributor, or from a contributor to a high-end starter, in terms of how that projection looks out for the next 2 to 3 years if they learn what they need to learn. So when you look at a guy like Courtland Sutton, there's a lot of things that I think are projection about him in the normal draft media, which is he's big, he's tall, he's strong, he's quick, and he's shown some propensity to catch the ball in tight coverage and win after the catch as a runner. So when you look at those skills, you say it's easy to see how he can go from being, you know, a really good college player to becoming a top-end pro player like a Brandon Marshall in his prime. But at this stage, you know, he has difficulty catching the ball on a consistent basis. He may make some flashy plays, but he lets the ball go through his hands too often. He has it bounce off his hands too often. And all of these are technique-driven issues that he has that I've shown in my videos, where he just doesn't catch the ball with his fingertips to control it well enough. And when you're going to get hit while you're trying to make the catch, that can disrupt you even more. And he's shown difficulty with that. He's shown difficulty with, you know, 100% effort as a route runner. And it's not just, you know, I'm not a big take plays off guy who gets freaked out over that with all my evaluations. I really don't note that very often. So when I do, it's a big deal. And I feel like that when I seen Courtland Sutton play, his blocking effort, his route running effort has been so spotty throughout, you know, at least the 14 games that I've looked through, that it was notable enough that I had to mention it. And so did this count against him in the sense that, you know, there were more times than not that he would earn a no in certain areas of his skill sets that he would have otherwise gotten a yes for, and that cost him some points, and then he only got maybe upside points for flashing that skill. And that means that, you know, it may have cost him a tier and a half in terms of his value. And I even put in the RSP, if you want to just believe that he's going to suddenly grow up and mature over the span of a year or two, which happens because these are young guys, if that happens, then yeah, he could be, you know, I could see him ranked in my top seven right now, and I wouldn't argue with you taking him there, but I'm not going to fudge that number. I'm not going to fudge my process just so that I can look like everybody else because I'm afraid of what it's going to look like that I have him ranked 22nd. Because even though I've got him ranked 22nd, the more important number in my evaluation is the number to the right of that ranking, which is his depth of talent score, which is still at a you know, high-end reserve level, which means that really he's more on a contributor level. And that means that if you get to the right team, they give him, you know, certain set of sub packages to work with that he does really well. He could be a productive starter, at least in a, you know, as a third receiver or a sometime second receiver right now this year, and then continue to grow into it to the point that he develops into a starter. And he's going to get a lot of opportunities because in the NFL, we've already seen that there's a level of draft privilege, you know, and that draft privilege is that the higher that you're picked, the more money they invest in you. And then that means the more bias that they have in favor of you when it comes to practices, because you're going to get 3 to 4 to 5 times as many reps as a guy who's drafted late or an undrafted free agent. And teams, when they look at you, make mistakes. You could probably make, and I've seen this, you can make 2 to 3 times as many mistakes as an early round draft pick who's getting more reps, and they're still going to look at you and say, oh, he just needs more work to get better, compared to a guy who makes half the amount of mistakes who was drafted at the end of the, you know, the draft or not drafted at all. And he makes one mistake out of, you know, the 3 reps he's going to get that day. And they're going to say, see, he can't play. And he didn't even make as many mistakes as the, and of the same kind, even as the higher round pick. So because of that, he's going to get more opportunities. He's going to get the opportunity to grow out of that a little faster. And that makes him probably a better prospect. Sometimes it's just about draft day privilege as much as it is about talent. And he's got talent. He just may not have it to the degree where he's a slam dunk. Because if he struggles, I'm pretty sure it will be because He either breaks down due to effort with his with blocks and blocking, and they don't like what they're seeing there, or more importantly, his ability to consistently catch the ball in situations where they're really NFL caliber targets that he has to make that he dropped or let go through his hands way too often at SMU.
I think when we look at this wide receiver class as a whole, there's a lot of guys that fit that mold more as a number two wide receiver, someone who's going to have a productive NFL career, but might not ever be that true game-changing talent that dictates coverage and keeps offensive coordinators up at night. So if I'm an NFL team, and I don't think this even necessarily applies for the Bears, but if I'm a team that needs that number one wide receiver, and I recognize that I can't get that with some of the top prospects in the draft, and my best chance is probably going to be swinging for the fences on one of these guys that I can hopefully develop into someday being that number one wide receiver. If there was one guy, maybe even in day three of this draft, that you feel like has a good shot to reach that number one wide receiver potential, who would you take your chances on?
You know, there's a couple things to play there. One is that, yeah, we often like to look for that guy who is as close as possible to 6'2", 215 and above and runs that 4.3 or low 4.440, who you think can win the ball in the air and be that primary guy. But we also look at the fact that there's more and more spread offenses in the NFL or more spread looks, that we're starting to see a proliferation of slot receivers who are bigger guys who can also play a little bit on the outside and be moved around, like Juju Smith-Schuster, Cooper Kupp, and Michael Thomas are three excellent examples over the past few years who have been good example who can deliver on that level because of the fact that teams are in more 11 personnel sets. So when you take a look at that, you know, guys who may fit that bill, some of them are the smaller players who might evolve, have a shot at evolving into players, maybe not nearly as good as Antonio Brown, but good enough to make up for their size difference and still be an outside threat and do it at a high volume of production. And guys like Kiki QT, Anthony Miller, and Richie James are all kind of in that same block for me, who can deliver on that level, maybe be able to evolve a little bit more with their separation off the line of scrimmage. And they've shown flashes of being able to win on the outside. Jordan Lasley is really an intriguing guy to me because there's a couple of things. I mean, I joke around that we all tend to be a magnet for certain types of players. And I tend to, you know, I kind of call it like an equivalent of football psychological imprinting. And that, you know, my imprinting for running backs, it tend to be like physical, hard-nosed players who get a lot of yards after contact, who are versatile, but they're much quicker than they are fast. If they're fast, that's great, but they tend to be really quick and have some creativity about them. With wide receivers, you know, I've joked around that, you know, more than anything, that some part of my imprinting is I like troublemakers. I like guys who are immature and that I see what they do on the building. And I go, let me look at their bio, because I guarantee you that they're probably having some issues in their life that's going to prevent them from reaching their potential. And when you look at Jordan Lasley, he's hadn't any major issues, but he's a guy who's, you know, gotten in trouble a little bit here and there, gotten into some fights. Someone who needs to grow up a little bit, but I've heard that he's a nice guy. He's a smart guy, that some of the issues he has really are just really simply down to maturity. But when you watch him on the field, you know, he's got that skill to win vertical in the vertical game. He tracks the ball over his shoulders well. He has strong hands to win the ball, though he has a high drop rate. I think the drop rate probably has to do a little bit more with either difficulty of catches or with him trying to turn up field, because he's a very good receiver. He's a very good runner after the catch who often breaks the first reach or wrap, which you don't always see often with guys who are even bigger than he is at 6'1", 203. So I think he has a chance to turn into a player kind of in that realm of what we see from DeAndre Hopkins and Stevie Johnson, a guy who may start off as a wide receiver too or be slated as such, but can win enough with the ball in the air to re-deliver. And then another two players that I think could maybe be on the borderline for that. Jaleel Scott is interesting to me out of New Mexico State, because if you look at him right now and you look at the combine metrics, you would say, oh, well, he's not even remotely in the same percentiles of his measurements as some of the top wide receivers. But you have to understand that we're looking at a very small subset of athletes, and any small level of improvement in you know, acceleration and change of direction skill can really vault you much higher in those percentiles. And when you look at his body type, he's got a similar body type, vertical leap and wingspan to AJ Green. And he makes those types of high difficulty catches in tight coverage, ones where he can really expand his catch radius and make awkward, strange, you know, hard to, you know, difficult adjustments while staying in bounds. He's done that repeatedly. And I like that he can drop his weight so that he can get in and out of hard cuts, which makes him a decent threat in the middle of the field. And he's willing to take contact in the middle of the field to catch the ball. The thing is he went to New Mexico State because he probably didn't do, from what I remember, he probably didn't do extremely well academically to qualify at some of the bigger name schools. And as a result, you know, New Mexico State is a FBS program and it's a Division I program, but you also have to understand that their philosophy towards recruiting is kind of like, they're not like, you know, a school like SMU, I would think, who's kind of like, look, you may not get into Texas, or you may get to Texas and decide to go, but you may decide that you want to be a starter, you want to get here right away, or you feel like you want to play at a smaller, at another program that's a little bit under the radar from them. And we can be really competitive in this fashion, and we can do, you know, and we can, and we provide you some top end of, you know, facilities and coaching and staff to really help you develop your game to that next level. I think New Mexico State is a little more of a program that's like, you know, if you come on over here and we'll, you know, they're not going to recruit sloppy seconds. They're not going to try and stay they're going to try and stay with the high school player throughout their entire decision-making course and be that like second choice that they can fall back on. They're kind of more like, our budget is what it is. And if you decide that you want to come to us, great. We have a football team. We compete against some top talent. But we're not actively going out there to try and, you know, do a ton, you know, with our facilities and football team and things like that. So I'm not trying to badmouth New Mexico State, but the point is that, you know, if there's a player who's trying to improve to become a pro ready player as an athlete, they may not have the same opportunities to do that as they would at a Texas or an SEC program or a high profile group like that. So I think Scott has a lot of room to improve in some of those metric areas that will improve his ability to separate and really maximize what I think is potentially better athletic skill than what he showed. And if that happens at 6'5", 218, and that ability to catch with that radius, he might be a surprise worth getting in the later round. Justin Watson, 6'3", 215, out of Penn, small school, really, really smooth route runner, who could be that kind of Eric Decker, Allen Hurns kind of player who delivers that borderline wide receiver one, kind of that wide receiver 1A or 1B kind of guy, depending on the offense.
Well, if the Bears come away with one of those guys, I think they'll be sitting pretty all right here on the wide receiver depth chart. And up next on the podcast, we'll look at some potential late-round running backs that could maybe be the last piece to fill in this Bears backfield. Keep it locked on Locked On Bears. We're here with Matt Waldman, and I want to wrap up with some day three running backs, because you look at this Bears draft history, it's been 4 years in a row we've seen them take a running back in the fourth or fifth round. And obviously, when you look at the roster now, with Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen, you know, they don't really need a traditional runner or really a traditional receiver out of the backfield. They just kind of need that third piece. And so when I look at this running back class, there's a couple of guys that I think are both interesting prospects and interesting fits when it comes to the Bears. Chris Warren from Texas and Ryan Nall from Oregon State. Both of these guys are sort of in that H-back move type role, but I think they can both do more than that. They can both contribute as runners, as receivers, and do a little bit of everything in the backfield. I kind of get the impression that you're a little bit higher on them than most, but can you kind of compare and contrast Warren and Nall, and why are you maybe a little bit higher on them? And I guess, how would you best utilize running backs like this in the modern NFL?
Yeah, and it's a great question. You know, where I have them ranked, if you look at where how many running backs will probably be taken, it's probably commensurate with where they would be ranked, which is in the sixth or seventh or, you know, round or early or priority free agent signing. It's just that I also, you know, I understand too that, you know, with perspective that, you know, there's some guys who have more draft stock than actual talent. So when it comes down to it, you look at a guy like Ryan Nall, he's a great example. I mean, this is players who teams don't really know how they want to use them or have two-way possible fits. They don't always have the value that you would expect them to because teams are more confused about what they want to do with them. Some teams may feel like they have to make a definitive, decision on who they are before they even get him into a camp. And so they may look at Ryan Nall and say he's an H-back because he started his career as an H-back after being a running back in high school. But Oregon State quickly switched him over, and at 6'2", 232, he was a guy with a 4.58 40, which is definitely within running back skill, a 4.16 20 shuttle, which is an excellent time in terms of that's better than what you're seeing from some of the top guys in this class. I mean, Saquon Barkley ran a 4.24, Darius, you know, Kerryon Johnson, 4.29, and you're looking at Nall at a 4.16. That's quick. You know, 6.95 three-cone drill. To me, those 20 shuttles, that acceleration in the 20 shuttle and that three-cone drill change of direction speed is far more important than whether you run a sub 4.5 40. Because most of the time you're going to be trying to get yardage by changing direction and accelerating. And that's those are the basic skills of setting up blocks. And Ryan Nall can set up blocks pretty well. I think he's a good runner who probably be a little bit better in a gap scheme right now. Cause I don't think while he has some quick cutting ability, I think he's not quite as sudden on the field than what he was with the metrics right now. And I think that with a gap scheme, he wouldn't have to do as much change of direction creativity in terms of making multiple cuts to get to the line of scrimmage or to set up a crease. He can just hit that thing and use his speed and his size to win and get yards downhill. And he's a very good receiver. You can detach him from the formation as you would expect for an H-back. So I like him a lot. He reminds me of guys like, on a level that he could aspire to be like a Kevin Barlow or Kevin Jones type of player. And I think that if you give him the opportunity to, you know, to really be a running back, he could blossom for you. Chris Warren's an interesting evaluation because I thought he might wind up being a top prospect in this class heading into this year. Certainly he was paired up with a new running back coach at Texas who coached Ezekiel Elliott at Ohio State. And that guy basically said that he thought Warren could develop into being one of the best players he's ever coached at the position. It just didn't work out. They had another player they competed with. Texas is a win now type of lose, don't have patience for any one type of program. And Warren, who started off really strong as a freshman, didn't really, you know, have as strong of a start. It wasn't bad, but it just wasn't one where it looked like that Texas was really sticking with them and committing to him. And they decided to try and get him on the field with another player at the same time who was behind, you know, was kind of Warren was competing with. So they decided to move him to tight end. And when you look at Warren's game, what's hard about his evaluation is determining really where he's fast and where he's quick, you know, like how fast, how quick, and how good he is at change of direction skill. Because when you look at his combine, it's fantastic. It's 6'2", 250. He ran a 4.18 20 shuttle, which is extremely fast. And so that tells you he's got really strong acceleration, you'd think, and a 6.98 three cone, which again is an elite level three cone time for a running back, especially at his size. But when you watch his tape, you wonder if, you know, the acceleration looks like it's there. The change of direction quickness, if it's one cut, I think it's good. But if you ask him to have to drop and jump cut or drop his weight and do a hard lateral cut, he gets into the cut fast, but he doesn't get out of it as fast. So I wonder when you look at that time, whether that time's indicative of what he could become or whether that's about the best you're going to see and that he was a little bit better, you know, with this particular, you know, exercise than what he'll ever become as a runner. If that's true, then you're looking at probably a guy who's more of a, a gap style, trap power, duo type of runner who can get downhill, lean through and get 3 to 4 yards just by leaning and pushing a pile. He does play to his strengths well. He doesn't try to be a Ron Dane scat back at 250. He knows who he is, and he definitely will punish you. And he has enough speed. I mean, he ran a 4.69 40 at the combine, which was pretty, people say it's pretty bad, but the baseline for me is much lower than what you'd actually think it would be. Arian Foster ran a 4.7240 and he was never fast. But he had that quickness and ability to bend that Warren shows some promise to be. And Warren understands again that he's not trying to be a scat back. So I like his ability to read the formation, get downhill, break tackles. When he gets in the open field, he actually ran a 4.54 40 later at Texas Pro Day, which further complicated it a little bit because there were a lot of people that said he was faster than he was quick. But then I saw quicker than he was fast. So it's probably one of the more difficult evaluations I've had on a running back. But I think he's one of the most intriguing because he can catch the ball. He's a good pass protector as a running back. But if he's going to become a tight end, it's going to take him 3 to 4 years to probably develop in that regard. And the Bears have already tried that with Ben Broniker. They're trying that with Adam Shaheen. Shaheen looks like he's going to succeed. But do you really want to take a running back and put him as an H-back? Because that's the H-back to me is probably the second most difficult position, or a running back. A tight end is the second most difficult skill position on offense to develop to a quarterback, because of blocking is such a different level of skill from college to pro. And while Warren's a good pass protector as a runner and could probably contribute now, asking him to be a run blocker at the line of scrimmage, you're starting over. I mean, Marquise Gray was a big old quarterback at Minnesota and who could run. And they moved him, and now he's finally at a point where if they don't draft a tight end in Miami this year, he might be competing with A.J. Derby for playing time now, and it's been like 3-4 years now. So I prefer Warren as a running back. I think he could be a surprisingly good one. But those are two that would be interesting for the Bears because they could probably, if they want to use Cohen Moore, and they want to get away from Howard, which I think would be kind of a dumb idea, but they do for whatever reason. If they think that Howard, can't rely on him to stay healthy, or they're worried about him breaking down, then they can kind of segment their backfield a little bit more and use Warren as the big guy and use Cohen as the little guy.
Do you think you could transition either Nall or Warren to kind of be a Kyle Juszczyk type receiver, H-back, fullback, part-time tight end type? Or I guess, how difficult of a move do you think that would be for these two guys, given their skill sets?
I think for Nall, it would be easier. I think Nall's a little bit already been a kind of an H-back who can block and prove some of that at the line of scrimmage. So I don't think he'd be bad at that. But I think Warren is more of a long stride, rangy guy who I think that his real pluses are with the ball in his hand or the ball arriving into his hands. And I don't think he would give you what you're looking for as a blocker. I think he might surprise in that realm, but I kind of feel like that Warren's kind of a boom bust play. Like, you're either going to get your next running back, your next lead running back, who is going to be, give you like 2 to 4 years worth of like top-notch production as a power back with some ability to, hit a lot of doubles and triples and, the equivalent of that in terms of a ground gainer who can catch. But I don't think you're getting an all-around football player in the way that Ryan Nall could deliver that for you.
Well, of course, we keep referencing your rookie scouting portfolio. And so I want you to tell us about it here for those of us that maybe aren't familiar with the production, or even just new listeners to the podcast that didn't hear about it when you were on back in November. How does it work? How did it come together? How much does it cost to buy? Who does that money benefit? What goes into making this kind of thing? And where can people find your RSP?
Sure. The rookie scouting portfolio is a 400-page draft guide that's designed for media, for fantasy owners, and I have my fair share of people who are employed by the league who read the book. I've been doing it for 13 years since 2006. It's a PDF document that's bookmarked from top to bottom. And part of the RSP comes out in two parts. You get the 400-page draft guide with all my notes on April 1st, and it's available now. And then you also get with it a post-draft version for those who play in dynasty leagues and redraft leagues who want that 1 to 2 year outlook based on fit. The pre-draft tends to have an even longer shelf life because as much as dynasty owners like to say they play in a long-term league, most of them play dynasty like they're in a redraft league because 2 years later, you look out on the waiver wire and you see lots of first and second round picks in their rookie drafts who are sitting there on the waiver wire to be picked up and often benefit from that. You get all of that information. And you'll also be put onto a monthly newsletter that I'll be giving updates about. This will be my first year doing that. It's available for $21.95, all of that information. 10% of it goes to Darkness to Light. So most of it benefits me because I got to run a business and this is how I make my living. But 10% of every sale goes to Darkness to Light. I've been sending it to them since 2012, and they're an organization dedicated to preventing sexual abuse in communities through training of individuals, businesses, municipal organizations, government organizations, schools. And they are an excellent group. You can check them out on Charity Navigator to find out a little bit more about them. It is Child Abuse Prevention Month. They're also good at being able to work with people to help them address abuse when it does happen in communities, because as we've seen with Michigan State and with Penn State, that oftentimes organizations can really screw things up and compound the damage that happens to the victim because of the fact that they don't know how to handle or address these types of issues. So they do a lot of training on that as well. It's a great organization. I definitely recommend checking it out. And you can find all of this at mattwallmanrsp.com, and you can order the RSP from there.
Well, it really is a great production and an even better cause behind it. So, I mean, it's really worth every single penny. It's definitely a must-purchase draft guide for me, and especially for anyone that plays fantasy football. That's really generally where it's geared toward, but anyone interested in the NFL draft will find more than enough information in there. And really, Matt Waldman is a must-have for the Locked On Bears podcast. Matt, I appreciate you letting me throw some names at you, and you really fired right back with great analysis. You're always on your toes and just bringing top-notch stuff. Really appreciate you joining us today.
Hey, Lauren, it's always my pleasure, and I look forward to talking with you again down the line.
Thanks again to Matt Waldman for that really incredible level of detail on these draft wide receivers and running backs. If you enjoyed our conversation, be sure to subscribe to the Locked On Bears podcast on whatever podcast listening app you're using right now. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, you name it. Locked On Bears is there for you to subscribe and keep coming back for more NFL draft analysis. Coming up next week, we're going to dive into some more sleepers, including some small school prospects that Ryan Pace might have his eye on. I've seen them take guys like that in the past. They've brought in a few of them for visits and pro days and meeting with them at the combine. So we're going to be joined by Emery Hunt from Football Game Plan. He is the authority on FCS Division II prospects. We know the Bears are the team that likes him. It's a match made in heaven, and Emery really knows his stuff. Really looking forward to getting his thoughts on some of these guys. He was high on Tariq Cohen last year. He saw the whole thing coming, and we'll see who he can predict for a lot of success this year. And we might be ahead of the curve here in finding the next small school prospect to come to the Bears on the third day of the draft. That's coming next week on the show. So follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Bears. We're on Facebook, Locked On Bears. We even have a Locked On Bears Instagram account. Follow Locked On Bears on all of your social media. Keep up with our shows. Keep tuning in. Keep learning about these NFL draft prospects, because you will be so ready for the end of next week when the draft finally comes around. Locked On Bears will have you all set for draft day. Then each night of the draft, we will break down the picks that the Bears make. And in the weeks to follow, we'll break down the fit. We'll break down the Bears roster. Eventually, we'll be previewing the season. There's training camp. So much good stuff coming all off season on Locked On Bears. Hope you'll stick with us through it all. And I hope you'll bear down.